This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios, I'm Jim Rome. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. We start our number two. Nice to have you here. All right, so the second hour is wide open. Third hour is loading up. We've got the manager of the Houston Astros, A.J. Hinch, top of hour number three. Tyler Kepner, who writes for the New York Times, covers baseball for them, a national baseball writer, also in hour number three. So I've got a lot I've got to get done between now and then because I know it's going to be tough to get it done in the third hour. Same goes for you. You want to call right now, 1-800-636-8686. You want to follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. You want to email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at Habitate.com. All right, we spent the first hour all on the NBA All-Star Game. Fergie, the matchups, Ben Golver came in, broke that thing down completely. Let me change up on you. If you want to talk about the NBA All-Star Game, by all means do that. I just want to move on to the next thing, although I've got takes on that game still that I haven't gotten to. But I want to change up and talk some golf. All right, so this week at the Riv, it was all about one dude. We talked about it going into the tournament. We're talking about it the Monday after the tournament. It was all about one dude. One dude who fell from the top of the world golf rankings all the way down into the deep hundreds. A dude with multiple majors who recently contemplated retirement for health reasons. A dude who was beloved, extremely popular, but had not won a tournament in a long, long time. Now, don't get this twisted. This is not about Elgato. This is about Bubba Watson. Because the 6'3" lefty with the pink driver actually stuck around for the weekend. The spinal-fused tournament host named Eldrick Tont did not. That guy went out. He fired 76 on Friday before trading in his scorecard for another early ticket out of town. So, don't mind me while I talk about the winner and not somebody who played as much golf, tournament golf, as I did on Saturday and Sunday. Bubba is worth talking about. Bubba, a few years back, was a two-time green jacket winner and one of the best on tour. But that was then. This is now. He's been ice cold and MIA for the last couple of seasons. But it all changed yesterday when he stared down the back nine at Riviera. He didn't blink. Three birds in his last eight holes, including this dagger from a greenside bunker on the par 3 14th.
Just needs to get it out of the bunker. Gravity will take over.
Oh, yeah. Bubba Watson makes it two at the 14th. And a two-shot lead.
Call it, baby. Call it.
Thanks to CBS for that. You know, Riv often gets compared to Augusta National because of the creativity and the imagination it takes to get around that track and win. And as we know, when he's on, nobody is more creative than Bubba, who was shaping banana shots over opposite fairways, bending them right to his spot. So it's no wonder that this dude is a three-time winner at the Riv, a two-time winner at the Masters, something only Ben Hogan has done before him. And then how's this for some serious deja vu? 4 years ago yesterday, I had Bubba on this show right after he had won for the first time at Riviera. And I asked him then, what's it like to win at such a historic track?
There's a lot of history at Riviera. Any win on tour is good, but is there something about Riviera that makes it a little more special?
Oh, for sure. It's a venue that we don't change much. You know, they haven't added too much length. They haven't added new greens, new bunkers. They left that the history there, and that's what I love. That's what most of us tour players love. We love that going back and seeing the same thing. We can see where the great players have hit shots from. We've seen where great players have made putts from. And so for me, I mean, it was an honor and a thrill to have my name somewhere associated around that tournament now and some of the bigger names that that I never got to meet, never got to watch play golf. For me, it's a dream come true to be part of that venue and about some of the great names there.
Bubba on this show when he last won it. Crazy that 4 years and a day, 4 years and a day later, that he'd win for a third time. And when you saw him roll in that par on 18 yesterday, the emotions overcame him because, frankly, he probably didn't know if he was ever going to win any tournament again.
It means a lot. My goal has always been to get 10 wins, and so this got to my 10th win. There's so many emotions going through my head right now. Never know if you're going to play good again. Never know if you're going to be able to lift the trophy again. So many things. I thought about retirement. I mean, there's just so much stuff going through my head right now. I can't believe I'm going to lift the trophy here in a second.
Good for him. I mean, this week's set up to be all about somebody else's comeback, another guy's comeback. Then Bubba steals the headlines when he ripped laser shot after laser shot and once again conquers the Riv, something the other guy has not done even once. If I'm Bubba, I can't wait to get to Georgia in April. If I'm the Cat, I can't wait to get to the range and the practice green and the simulator and the track man and anything else that's going to help me flip 76s into 67s. Jim, when are you going to talk about the photo? This is on 12 Wood. I don't know, Wood. When are you going to do another scope? Friday night, probably, right? All right, so he's talking about the photo. We all know the photo he's talking about. We're talking about Hawk's photo. Tiger's trip to Riviera ended pretty much the way that I would have expected it to, early. Now, again, I had an open mind. I was positive going into the event. I actually had some sort of expectations for him, and then he made me look bad. Should have gone with my gut, or my head, actually. So I thought he would do better than he did. And I was fine with him shooting that opening round 72. I thought, you know what, there might be something here. This guy's not going to win the tournament, but he might make it to Saturday, but he didn't. But the guy who, even in his prime, who would get eaten alive by Riv, was not getting to the weekend when he was spraying that big dog 30 yards deep again. This guy's never going to win anything at all if he can't play it off the tee. And he was just grinding to salvage pars. Something he could not do anywhere near as well on Friday as he did on Thursday. But while the Cat spent the weekend at home, the Hawk spent the weekend at Riv. And if it's possible, the Sparrow set a new low for representing me, this show, and even himself. Because if it weren't embarrassing enough that the executive producer of my program has been washing up Tiger's Bridgestones, he goes full-fledged golf loser when he reaches across the rope line for a high five, a legitimate high five. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you see it. If not, go to Hawk's timeline, because you know I'm not putting it on mine. He reaches across the rope for a high five, a legitimate high five from Rory McIlroy, who hits Hawk with the Heisman and maybe the greatest stink eye ever. If you have not seen the tweet, check what Hawk posted over the weekend. A picture that says 1,000 words, and every last one of them clowning and killing Hawk. Now, this is not the first time I've had to say this. I'm sure it's not going to be the last time I have to say this. My reputation, my integrity, my cred, all very important to me. My EP, executive producer. In fact, an extension of myself. Only this extension is like some cat-tatted moron who finds new and incredible ways to embarrass me. And don't think that I'm just doing this on the air. Trust me, we've had this talk off the air already. But now I'm doing it for all of your benefit because you weren't here for that conversation. Check out the wardrobe on this guy as he's roaming the grounds of one of the nicest country clubs on the PGA Tour. Look at what this guy's wearing. A puke yellow hat representing a basketball team in Seattle that has long since been killed off. A shirt inspired by a grandmother's wallpaper. Jorts. Calf-high black socks over some hipster boat shoes that make his pale twig legs look even more pale. Hawk, you're lucky they let you anywhere near that track. Hell, you're lucky Rory didn't suplex you or put security on your ass. The freaking Sparrow. This is a guy who has been talking nonstop about this weekend for months. This is all this guy's been talking about. He even flew his mom into town to help with his daughter so he could follow his beloved Gatto around the track. Never for one second thinking that maybe Eldrick was at best a coin flip shot at making the weekend, considering he had to grind his ass off just to make the cut at Torrey, a place that he owns and loves. So while part of me is thankful that Eldrick did not make the cut, I'd have to fire Hawk if they hit him with a taser for freaking out when he got within eye shot of Elgato. Even when Tiger isn't out there, he's making a fool of himself. Hell, Julio Jones thought reaching for a high five from Rory was embarrassing. At least give Justin Thomas some love. At least he's been in the jungle a couple of times. Another week, another embarrassing moment for my EP. And another day where I have to weigh the pros and cons of letting this guy be a part of my crew and then sift through Twitter, trying to get through it all to get back on track with the program. All right, so just to give you a sense of some of the reaction on Twitter to Hawk. I mean, Hawk's problem is now he just keeps thinking, what do I do to up the bar? How do I up the bar? I've already gotten ink of my cat. Now I've gone to a PGA Tour event and got a picture of Rory McIlroy looking like he wants to fight me. I mean, Hawk, what do you do next? Where is there to go from here? See the reaction. And Mark the Nomad tweets, my word, Hawk, that outfit. Have you given up? Look at Jim Benton, the oldest of the old school. James Kelly, like 20 years before James Kelly. Benton. Benton might have been the first unofficial, I don't want to say employee of the program because that's not true. But I mean, Benton was James Kelly before James Kelly, Stucknut before Stucknut. Benton was here almost from day one. He tweets, Bill Belichick on a beach thinks that's a bad look. And Paulie T. Wall tweeting about Hawk. Quote, Hawk, help me out here. How would you describe your style? Seems like it's one of those intentional, countercultural, dumpy style things. But that's just my guess. Please advise. Thanks. Hey, did that exceed 140? That looks like that exceeded 140. I'm not saying that what he said is not true. Hey, stay on that, y'all. Stay on that, y'all. Count that up for me. That looks long. At Total Big E tweets, you should let the wife dress you from now on, pigeon. Dude, how'd you get out of the house looking like that? Yeah, go ahead. What do you have to say for yourself, Hawk? I know nothing good.
What's up, Jim? How are you?
Stop asking me things like that. What do you have to say for yourself?
Well, first off, we got an early start because it was Huntington Beach to Santa Monica.
Oh, so you got dressed in the dark, so you have no idea what you were wearing.
No, I knew what I was wearing, but my wife was asleep, so she didn't know what I was wearing.
Okay, right.
And golf is this weird sport where the spectators dress
not
like
not as weird as you're making it, Hawk.
That's true, but the spectators dress like they're going to get on the course at some time and start hitting the ball themselves. It's a terrible look where they wear like shorts and a polo tucked in with the Titleist hat and the baggy sunglasses. So I go for my
Dude,
own
there's
skis.
Not, there's not a Muni in the world that would let you play golf dressed like that.
That's right. So that's why I'm saying the other spectators dress like they're about to jump on the course. I like to go the opposite direction.
Oh, okay.
And, right. You know, I was looking to make a statement. And
well, you did, Hawk.
Thank you very much. I take that as a compliment. And
you shouldn't. It was not meant as a compliment.
I followed Rory around the entire back nine. I was hitting him every hole. Rory, what's up? What's up? And finally, my friend decided to cross the other side of the ropes and take a picture of me getting denied by Rory. That was like the third time that day. What you don't see before the picture is Rory looks at me and then immediately looks away. He wanted nothing to do with me. I also saw Justin Thomas, who I hit with a Team Crunchy peanut butter blast, which he appreciated. He looked back. He smiled. He nodded. And then Pattisauer from Bugaha ran into me because he recognized the shirt from an earlier tweet. So I ran into him on about the 12th hole.
Wait, you're talking really quickly and covering a lot of ground. Pattisauer was here.
Yeah, he...
From Bugaha.
Yes, he now lives in the Los Angeles area. This was his second time at the Riv. He was there with a buddy.
There goes the neighborhood.
Right, exactly. So we met up and got some beers and hung out and...
You slammed beers with Pattisauer.
I mean, he slammed the beers. I slow sipped one between 13 and 18 because I had a long drive ahead of me, and I was being responsible no matter how bad it looked out there.
Right.
And the first question he asked was, how do I get on the podcast? To which I told
him. That's a pretty easy question to answer. It's never happening.
Right.
Ever.
I said, Jim says you're never getting on, and I double-checked that with you to make sure that was still true. But we had a good time. And may I please say this, the Riviera, the most spectator-friendly course in all of golf.
Obviously, they let you on.
Exactly. Beautiful course, easy to walk, easy to see everything. It was an amazing time.
You know why? Because your dude Elgato wasn't there.
That's true. The gallery was one-tenth the size that it was, so I got a lot of mobility. Bad for Rory, good for me. A lot of fun. Would do it again.
Yeah,
can't
dude,
wait
horrific,
till next time.
Horrific for me and my brand that I'm working so hard to build up. You understand this, right?
Yes, and I did mean to tell you that. Wherever I go, I always have you in the back of my mind, which is why I didn't ask to get credentialed. I didn't wear anything that said I was a member of the media. I was like, I got to keep Jim out of this.
But the problem is, dude, even if you don't have that credential around your neck, you still represent me. Even if you're not a credentialed working stiff that day, you still, when you leave the house, you represent me. As long as you pull a paycheck from me, you represent me. You understand that?
I do. But
didn't 5 seconds ago until I explained it to you.
Can we meet halfway? I'm not going to yell, get in the hole. I'm not going to swear. I'm not going to get drunk, but I am going to dress like an idiot, and I am going to try to get some high fives.
Halfway is stop leaving the house while you work for me looking like that, and mostly at sporting events, or especially at sporting events. That's halfway. You want to meet halfway? Meet me halfway in the hallway where I can fire you so we don't do it on the air. Come on, Hawk. Stop negotiating your alleged hipsterness. There's nothing hip about that, all right? Stop doing it.
No promises, but thank you. I will take it under advisement. You've given me a lot of room to be
here.
I've
given you your whole life, Hawk. What are you talking about?
And it's much appreciated. And I will try to correct my wardrobe and my antics, but there are no promises.
All right, so I'm going to take that as I'm not changing anything, and you should take this as your 30-day probationary period. Get it together, Hawk.
You got it.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you for nothing. Meanwhile, the tweets keep coming. Hawk ain't changing for nothing. He's not. This is the money that he spent when he went to the Salvation Army and bought all those clothes, and this is what he's going to wear. My man's just not giving in. I've had guys come through this house that were like that, where I'm like, listen, this is really important that you all understand this. When I hire somebody to work here, I don't want a sycophant. I don't want somebody to yes me. I want somebody who's got a different point of view than mine, but not so different that we disagree on everything. I want somebody who can make the show better. I want somebody who can make me better. But at the same time, there is a culture that I've developed here, and you do need to fit in on some level. And this is essentially Hawk feeling himself like, hey, man, this is who I am. You know what you hired. Quote, I'll meet you halfway. Let's see how the clones feel about it. At J.P. Emmett, completely serious, Jim. When I saw Hawk's clothes this weekend, I thought Denlesk's photoshopped him. No, that's really how he dresses. Dear Jim, thanks a lot for that rant. Anyway, let's play some basketball.
Let's play some basketball.
Regards, Hawk. Signed, Randall, WFI, in the OC.
Yeah!
You know, Hawk, if you keep coming on like that, and I keep having to go as hard as I am on that, some of it will go back your way. Some of it will be like, you know what, Roman, cut the guy some slack, dude. That's a little harsh. But you know what? 98% are going to say, good job, Rome. Handle your business. Clean your own house. Take care of it. Dear Jim, we all know personal appearance smack is not show fodder. It's not fair. It's not fair because you allow your EP, Adam Hawk, to prance around the Genesis Open, harassing pro golfers, snapping truly deplorable photos of himself, and hanging out with losers who can't make the podcast. All the while, dressed like Griffey the Cat, picked out his clothes for a tea party with the ladies at the local Elks Club. Come on, Jim. Give the clones a break. Signed, Brenton PC. War Hawk's mom taking the first flight back to Seattle. I think she did, right? Hey, Brent, don't act like I didn't just call him to the mat. Don't act like I'm not handling this. I'm trying. He's kind of like that kid. He's like the kid. He's like that one child that's the black sheep of the family. And you don't give up on the kid. At least not yet. I'm trying. But I am going to hold him accountable, and I'm not letting it slide. Jim, when are you going to talk about the photo? Yeah, I heard you the first time, 12-wood. Scott, the 805. Did Hawk's grandmother bite the dust and he inherited bolts of old fabric and a sewing machine? That would explain it. That's one logical explanation. I could ask, but then I would have to talk to him again. I don't know. Hawk, you know what time it is. We've discussed these things already. Stop embarrassing me. Julio, Rory, Griffey. Take care of your business. All right, 1-800-636-8686. Hard to imagine that when you consider what the Yankees have done, that I'm still talking about the Mets. But I will be. That's coming up. Don't go anywhere. Here is the deal. If you or somebody you know snores,
you're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
AJ Hinch coming up next hour. Trying to get to my thoughts on the Daytona 500, which was great. The Mets going Mets. I've got thoughts on this whole notion that LeBron should just shut up and dribble. It's a truly terrible take. And I don't care what your politics are, honestly. I really don't care what your politics are. It's a truly terrible take. I mean, it's like these guys need to have opinions. These guys need to make a difference. These guys need to shut up and dribble. How can it be both? So I'll try to get to that later on. Dear Snags, I hate it when people roll out that things were better back in the day. However, after this weekend, not only am I hopping on that bandwagon, I am deeming myself the grand marshal of that parade because after last night, I firmly believe things were better back in the day. For example, we used to kick off basketball by jamming out to John Tesh's Round Ball Rock. Now we start basketball games with a black-eyed pea awkwardly moaning into a mic. Not hot. Not sultry. Awkward.
Awkward.
Charles Barkley saying that he wanted a cigarette afterwards was great. Even better was, you know that Chuck probably had about 2 hours worth of commentary on that. He so badly wanted to go back to that. At halftime, that was the first thing he brought up. Nothing about the game. He went right to, can we talk about the anthem? Can we talk about the anthem? And then Shaq tried to have her back by saying things like, I still love you, Fergie. I got your back, Fergie. It was different. Difference good. Difference good. And Charles was like, oh, it's different, all right.
Leave her alone.
I needed a cigarette after that. Leave her alone.
Leave her alone. I still love you. I still love you, Fergie. Leave her alone. It's different. Oh, it was different, all right. It's all different.
Leave her alone.
Ken and Mission Viejo. He also adds, unwore my wife walking in on me streaming Fergie's sensual anthem performance, assuming I'm streaming something else online. And the only thing that I could say to defend myself was, let's play some basketball.
Let's play some basketball.
Yeah, Ken, it probably would have helped had you not been in your office with your door slammed shut with your chair up against it. Your wife probably would have trusted you. Oh, let's play some basketball.
Let's play some basketball.
Where, Ken? Do you have a net in the backyard? Where are we going to play some basketball?
Leave it alone.
Snags. Man, Hawk sure had one hell of an embarrassing weekend. Signed, Fergs.
Let's play some basketball.
Don't you wonder, when she hit that, let's play some basketball, was that a triumphant finish, or was that the 2018 version of, anyway, what's poppin', Twitter? Which one was that? Was that like an artistic flourish? Was that a triumphant flourish? Like, I just crushed that. You know, was that like, was she styling her shot? Was that her mic drop? Or was that her knowing, uh-oh. I mean, whoever's close to her must have been like, where's her phone? Get her phone. Whatever you do, do not let her on her phone. At Oak City Austin tweets, yeah, Jim, whoever made the decision to let Fergie up there should be held accountable. Signed, Hawks outfit Saturday. Remember, Ben Golver said that he saw her sound checking about an hour prior to and was having all sorts of technical problems, and there was feedback, and there were issues. So it did not surprise him at all that it went as badly as it did. I don't think mere technical issues can describe exactly what she did. And can I tell you? Let me see real quickly. Well, the good news is she's no longer trending on Twitter, but was the morning after, and that's bad news. That is really bad news. You don't want your anthem trending after your anthem, and you really don't want your anthem trending on Twitter the morning after your anthem. At House Punter. Hey, Jim, we love Adam Style. Signed, The Blind. Well, see, now it's not funny anymore. It was not funny at the time, but the reaction was sort of amusing. Now it's just getting played and tired and kind of lame. So, back to work. Let's get back to work. AJ Hinch coming up next hour. When we come back, I do want to talk some Mets baseball. That's my next topic, Mets baseball. First things first, time for a sports update. Here is the latest on this Monday morning. Rich Ackerman will handle.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Now would be a good time to call. Earlier today, the phone lines were all lit. Now they're not. Now is the time to call because the third hour is a busy hour. Call me right now, 1-800-636-8686. Now remember, last week we talked Mets baseball because New York Mets skipper Mickey Callaway opened up some eyes when he dropped the quote of the year. Now, on the one hand, if you've spent any time around a Major League Baseball clubhouse or a manager or a pitching coach, this is not an unusual line. What was unusual is it's a line that made it into the mainstream. This is not an unusual line in baseball. And what I'm talking about, in case you missed that story, if you're in New York City, there's no way you could miss that story. But if you missed the story, Mets skipper Mickey Callaway said that when discussing his bullpen, he was not going to overuse his bullpen. And by overuse, he was not going to get guys up to start warming up and have them throw an inordinate amount of pitches in the bullpen and then not get into a game. There is a phrase to describe this that literally every manager who has ever managed has used, but most know better than to get in front of a microphone or a camera with it.
Dry humping guys is something that I feel very strongly about, and
so he feels very strongly about that. In other words, we're not doing it. We're not doing it. We're not going to get guys up and have them sit down and get guys back up and have them do this and waste their arms, waste their pitches. We're just not doing it. He's not about that life. Not for his team, not for his bullpen, not for a pitching staff that got turned inside out by Terry Collins. No more dry humping of his bullpen. And then hopefully he won't use that phrase anymore. He just can't go for that. We know this.
I just don't go for that.
So, apparently somebody did not send the Mets GM, Sandy Alderson, the same memo. I mean, no sooner than the Mick realizes, yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that. I probably shouldn't use that phrase to describe that situation. No sooner than Mick somehow was able to pull himself out of that, Sandy jumps right back into it and rekindles the flames of one of the great dry humps of our time. The Tim Tebow dry hump. Because America's favorite try hard is back in camp with the Mets for a second season in a row. This after setting the world on fire with a combined .222 batting average over nearly 500 plate appearances. So Sandy goes straight-faced to a reporter when he uttered the following words about a potential major league run for Tim Tebow at some point.
Somebody asked me whether I think he'll be
a major league player at some point. I think he will play in the major leagues. That's my guess. That's my hope. And to some extent now, after a year and a half, a modest expectation.
God, you remember when this guy was so well-respected with the Oakland A's? I mean, let's go ahead and put that into context for a minute. Let's put into context what's happening in New York as the baseball season arrives. The Yankees spent the offseason putting Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton into the same outfield. There's a legitimate chance the two of these guys could hit 100 or more bombs between just the two of them, or maybe more. The Mets, though, are selling their fans on a 30-year-old who managed to run his bat into 8 big flies in 2 levels of A-ball last year and did it against teenagers and kids in their early 20s when he's a grown-ass man, a 260-pound slab of granite who still takes BP with his hat off, his hair gelled, and didn't completely embarrass himself, so now they've got him on the fast track. I mean, sure, he struck out nearly 30% of the time in his official at-bats last year, but while the Yankees are going all in and swinging trades for the NL MVP, the team right across town has their GM pimping a sideshow, all to sell a couple of more jerseys in a few more towns down on the farm. And look, this is not a knock or a crackback on Tebow. Tebow is having the time of his life. Tebow is brilliant. This guy's getting paid to play baseball terribly. He's turned failing into a well-paid job, into an industry onto itself, with another book deal and speaking tour right around the corner, I'm sure. But just when Mickey Callaway sounds like he's hell-bent on turning the Mets into an actual baseball team and not some sideshow, the GM is off-pedaling Tebow. Maybe the last piece of red meat that he's got to sell his fans. Even when he has to know damn well, there's not a shot in hell that guy's ever going to make it to the big leagues. Not unless it's another shameless ploy to get people to show up after the Mets are out of contention and to sell a few more jerseys. I mean, who are you kidding with that? You want to talk about a dry hump.
Dry humping guys is something that I feel very strongly about.
At least your GM does, too. I mean, you talk about perspective or the town and the way this thing sets up. Look at New York. Look at the Mets. Look at the Yankees. Look what the two of them are doing. And I can't get away from Hawk. Hey, Jim, I thought Adam looked very snazzy. His shirt looks like my bathroom wallpaper. Toodles, Marie.
Who am I speaking to?
Jim Rome, Esquire.
Jim, I just wanted to call and tell you that I love your show, and I think that the winners of the Super Bowl really deserve to win. And that's what I wanted to tell you.
Racker. Marie, golden ticket. Do it, Alvin. Give her a golden ticket. I feel like Shaq.
I've got a golden ticket.
I feel like Shaq.
I've got a golden ticket.
Except that Shaq was defending the indefensible, and I'm defending somebody who should need no defense whatsoever.
Leave her alone.
Leave her alone. I got your back. Leave her alone. She's different. Difference good. Leave her alone.
I'm not going to do that. Marie was sweet. Marie was sharp. Marie had a take. Marie was respectful. In other words, all the things that most of you clones are not. She's off limits. Leave her alone. Leave her alone.
Leave her alone.
Leave her alone. She's off limits. Let's get a telephone call in here. Why don't we go to North Carolina, Buddy? Hey, Buddy, good morning. What's up?
My bad. I don't feel that it gets enough, really, TV after the races are over. If you look at this race that they just had at Daytona, it was a crash fest. I mean, you know, and here's this lady, Dana Patrick, in her last NASCAR race, and just like all the time that she's been running in NASCAR, the only one thing that she had was a pole, okay? And every time she gets taken out of a race, it's because of somebody stupid who does stupid moves. Also, at all those cars that got crashed, that's $200,000 a car, you know, and there's, plus there's people in there. And I don't think that any of these jocks, any of them, could drive those cars and survive in wrecks like that. It frustrates me that they don't get enough TV time.
Are you saying they don't get enough respect? They don't get enough TV time? What's your point here?
Yeah, they don't get enough respect. They don't get enough airtime to explain. And just the thing is that I look at all these other sports, all these basketball and football and all this other stuff. Them guys couldn't get in those cars and drive them if they had to. Those guys put their life on the line every time. And then they have this crash fest. And then nobody talks about it after that.
Right. All right. Well, let me jump in here. I was going to talk about it, but fair enough. Let me respond to what you said, buddy. Thank you. Buddy, North Carolina, saying, you know, what is this? What is this? Why is nobody talking about this? Why is nobody giving these guys the respect that they deserve? None of these NBA guys could get behind the wheel of those cars. Well, most of them would not fit in one of those rigs, for one thing. Hey, look, fair enough. Yeah, I think you're barking up the wrong tree if you're going to bring that complaint here, because I talk plenty of NASCAR. In fact, I would say that as mainstream media goes, I talk more NASCAR than anybody at all. We had Kevin Harvick on last week. I don't know that there's a single driver who's worth anything at all, not named Tony Stewart, who has not been on this program, and almost every last one of them multiple times. I talk NASCAR on this show all the time, and I've got nothing but respect for those guys for getting behind the wheel of those cars. Because as I've told the story before, when I went to the Brickyard, I got behind the wheel of the pace car with Jimmy Johnson. It was a Corvette, and Jimmy had that thing up to about $150. $150, and I don't want to say that he was driving that thing with his knee, but he had maybe one thumb on the wheel, and I'm telling you, we were up against the wall, and I was scared. I'm not even going to lie. I mean, I was scared, and he was just messing with me. He's looking over me like, yo, what's up, man? How's the fam? How's the show? How are things going? Great, Jimmy. How's the road in front of us going? How are we going to do on that first turn? Are we all right? He's like, bro, you nervous? I'm like, no, I'm good. Jimmy, I'm great. How many laps are we doing? How long is this going on? Trust me, if that's the feeling I got driving in the pace car with nobody else on the track going $150, I can only imagine what it's like when they're all rubbing and racing and going as fast as they are. I got nothing but respect for them. But to say that these other athletes can't do what they can do, right. Just like NASCAR athletes can't do what guys in the NHL can do, or Major League Baseball, or the NBA, or NFL. It's neither here nor there. It was a great race. It lived up to the hype. The ending was absolutely amazing. I will try to talk about it. But when you're coming off a Monday, the Monday we're coming, or the weekend we're coming off of, it's tough to get to everything, especially when somebody butchered the national anthem as badly as they did. In other words, I've only got 9 segments. Think about this. I've got 9 segments every single day. 3 of those segments generally are interviews, so now I've got 6 segments every single day. So I've got long-form rants. So coming off a weekend like that, if I've got 6 segments and I'm prepared to talk for 3 hours and one of those segments is dedicated to the national anthem, that makes it even less likely that I'm going to get to what you want me to get to, maybe in this case, the Daytona 500. But that's why you got to call. Don't wait for me to talk about what you want me to talk about. Also, on that 6-segment day, the 9-segment show, which is really 6, which is really 5 because of the anthem, it's really 4 because of Hawks clothing. It's not nearly as much real estate here as it might seem. A.J. Hinch, Astros manager, joins us. When we come back, you're listening to CBS Sports Radio and watching on CBS Sports Network.